trap by Masiti. Gave it to Fletcher. Kicks the half forward. Up flies Hurd. Here he is. The man that's built like a vacuum-sealed bag of walnuts. Kuna Fides goes wide. Harvey can't mark it. He's been given it anyway. Wasn't far off having his head caved in either there.
Vacuum-sealed bag of walnuts.
I love that commentary.
Oh, Dwayne is magnificent.
Reliving it all. Well, our very next guest, Jared. He played 278 games in the Navy Blue. He kicked 226 goals as Premiership player in 95. Two-time best and fairest, two-time All-Australian, Hall of Fame member, winner of the fifth season of Dancing with the Stars
as well.
Got to get that in there. Da-da-da-da-da. Anthony Kutafidi's been good enough to join us. Hi, Kuta. How are you going?
I'm Kelly, very well, yourself.
Have you ever been described as a vacuum-sealed bag of walnuts before?
Well, I've never heard him say it in that sort of way, but something very similar, which I probably won't repeat it here. It's very nice, I think. Anyway, it's very complimentary.
It's great to have you join us this afternoon. How's lockdown treating you? What's have you got any lockdown secrets you can share with us?
Look, I guess because I work from home anyway, Kelly, so majority of the time. So it's a little bit different because I can't meet up with friends and things like that and they're having the kids around. But I just try to stick to my normal routine, getting up early, doing my morning routine that I do. And, of course, I've got a lot of, you know, clients and customers and business partners. But it gives me time to spend with the kids too. And while we're still allowed to get out there once a day, I try to get them out just to clear their heads and myself too, of course, and get some fresh air, which I absolutely love.
Kurt, you work in the health and fitness space, and I think as a sideline, you are selling packs of walnuts fairly cheap at this stage. You're looking pretty sharp. Take us through your morning exercise routine.
Yeah, I don't know if I train every morning, Jerry, but what I've done in the last year and a bit, I've incorporated some meditation, which if you had asked me 2 or 3 years ago, I would have said, mate, you go somewhere else, I don't want to hear about it, but it's been really good for me. I go through my affirmations and my goals. I do all those sort of things. It's all part of what we incorporate with our business to try to really work on our mindset part. So I do that. And lately, I haven't really gone out in the morning to train because the gyms are closed down. But in the afternoon, I try to get out there or we go for a walk with my little boy, Lucas, who, you know, the young kids nowadays tend to spend too much time on the console playing those games, which I probably would have been the same if I had this sort of, you know, stuff back in my day, but I didn't have too much. So that's a sort of routine I have, and I try to, you know, read and just do a lot of things to just get that because I understand the importance of that because when I retired, as you all know, a lot of us, you know, suffer for a little while then. I did for a good 3 years until I sort of found my place again in this world.
But you didn't actually answer Jared's question. We want to know what the actual physical routine is. We've got 800 footballers out there that are desperate for some sort of motivation. How many push-ups, how many sit-ups, how many chin-ups are we talking?
Oh, mate, there's no more chin-ups. My shoulders are done and dusted. The push-ups have just started to come back just because now I'm indoors. My shoulders ache, so I don't do a lot. But what I have incorporated lately, in all honesty, with my team and my clients and family members and friends is online training. So what we do that on a Sunday morning at 10 a.m., Monday 7 p.m. and Wednesday 7 p.m. So we started with 4. I think it was last week, and we got it up to now 27 people. So hopefully we can grow that. It's a great routine, and as much as I never thought of training indoors too much in the past, it's actually been good to start working some other muscles that I haven't probably worked in a little while. So it's been good incorporating that with a little bit of running that I do outside. It's enough for me nowadays at 47 anyway.
Kuta, take us back then to when you first walked in the doors at the Blues. What was it like growing up as a young man with Bradley and Kernahan, Silvani, Madden? We could go on and on naming the champions of the club.
Oh, it's a great question, Jono. I tell you what, I walked through the corridors there at the Carlton Football Club and I seen all the 200 game players there, but I walked out into a team that had not just one, but probably 15, 16 incredible leaders there, and that's who I learned from, with the most incredible culture because for decades there they were so successful. So just by chance I walked into there and that's where I learned all my skills. I mean, obviously, as a young kid I was very shy. And I didn't really talk too much to the older boys because I'd just seen them so far above me in the respect that I had for them. But they were the ones who taught me everything, football and life. And so I was very blessed to have played with some of those greats that you just mentioned. Of course, Greg Williams too. And, you know, he was an absolute superstar. But, you know, how lucky was I to have Stephen Kernan as a captain back then, who was not only great on the field but off the field as well. So I was very, very lucky.
Brad Johnson was joined at the hip to Rowan Smith, and we've already gone through that relationship. In fact, I believe that that joint may have actually just snapped after the text I just got from Rowan Smith.
Yes.
He is just absolutely not happy with you. But you were joined at the hip to Ange Christou. Kuta, tell us about your great mate and what he's up to as well.
Yeah, look, we probably weren't as close as what a lot of people thought back in the late 90s, Jared. And he was a great mate. I met when I was 16, he was 17 at the Carlton under-19s. And, of course, same background. We're both, you know, Greek and all that. Mum was Italian. Like, we just hit it off as mates, then became, you know, best mates at footy. And I competed with him. And he was playing AFL footy before I did. And he was the one who kept me competitive because I wanted to beat him and he wanted to beat me. So we always did that little bit extra in the gym room, those bicep curls that we did to make sure we looked good on the beach. As we fought, even for the women, I'd rather them look at me than him. Competed with everything that we did. And he's a great mate. And if you know and understand his story, when Andrew was playing footy in his younger years, he'd win competition best and fairest, and his father stopped him from playing.
Right.
It wasn't until he started playing with the kids from the flats, the underprivileged kids, that Carlton recognised him and brought him to the club. And 2 years later, by 1990, the last game, he was playing senior footy. So unbelievable friend, great stories and things that I always remember. And I still catch up with Andrew, of course. And you know, when we played in that grand final together, it was my greatest day of my life, and I dare say his as well, and footy trips and all those things. And finally, Andrew, and I congratulate him. 4 years ago, I think he finally got married. So his mum was very happy because she kept telling me, why, Andrew, not find a good girl like your wife, Susie? And finally he did. So she was ecstatic to see him finally get married.
Jono, you should have played that game, lifting the, you know, doing the weights on a competition with Rowan Smith. That would have been a good one for you.
Yeah, thanks.
Fire away.
Now, Kuta, I had the opportunity to play on you a couple of times, Kuta, but when I sort of walked towards you, did you just laugh? What's this guy doing, this size of a guy coming towards me who is just going to dominate him?
No, I knew, Jono, don't worry, mate. Don't you put yourself down. You were unbelievable to play against, so you were always a threat. But look, even in honesty, Jono, and you had an incredible, consistent, better, you know, career than myself. But I even lined up on Libba once, and I didn't even see him. And I felt something chewing on my feet, and I looked down, it was a little Libba just attacking me. And even he was a threat as well. So, mate, they were just fantastic days.
There's talk, Kuta, obviously, with the new look season, if we can squeeze it in, that the games might go back to the burbs. What would it mean to you if we saw AFL footy in the way it stands at the moment, back playing at Princes Park?
I was very privileged and lucky to captain the Carlton Football Club on the last day at Princes Park. That place there meant the world to me. Some incredible memories. I never thought I'd ever say goodbye to that oval. So that was a very sad day, very emotional day for me, as a lot of the ex-Carlton greats came along to watch us that day, and we lost to Melbourne. But I had the honour to hold up that ball at the end of the game and hand it over to arguably Carlton's greatest player of all time, John Nicholls. So to me, it's memories. To me as a young kid, that's what I looked at footy. To me, I would love to see it back. That's me being biased, and I'm sure the younger generation may not agree to it. But for all of us that grew up in that era, those suburban grounds was just absolutely amazing. And people now always talk about Princes Park to me because in our memories or fond memories of the guys that used to come down to watch, when they see highlights of those ground, they always comment about it, that we had great times there. I remember the Heatley stand and the cheer squad being in front there, and Ange and I would walk down there before a game, say hello to everyone. We were one family unit.
Kuta, 99, the prelim result, unbelievable. Your last quarter goes down in history of the game, what you were able to produce. Take us into the change rooms, though, post that win. What was it really like in there?
I should say I'll probably speak to Jerry later, but his commentary on that game was that when I look back, I just think, how could he foresee what was about to happen? So,
Jared, that's why we got him on, is it?
I thought I'd better throw that out because that's the honest truth, and I've never really had a chance until the other day to tell him.
Well, it was one of the great quarters, I've got to say, Kuta. You weren't flying absolutely all day, but you finished up with 29 disposals and 2 goals, and it was probably the first time we'd seen that big body go into the middle of the ground. We'd seen you as a wingman, we'd seen you as a centre-half back, and we've seen you do everything, but this game was one of the great games of footy, the 99 prelim final, where the Bombers went in as $1.18 favourite, and I can remember before the match, John Elliott declared to all and sundry that the Bombers had actually cheated to win the 1993 grand final. So you can imagine the build-up to this particular game. They had no chance. They had absolutely no chance, the Blues. And I think because of poor goal kicking, at three-quarter time, what were you, Cooter? A couple of goals down and then all of a sudden it turned.
Yeah, we were. We had a remarkable first half of the quarter. I will never forget the before the game, John Elliott coming into the change rooms and just going around. He goes, Cooter, I've got a funny feeling about today. And I don't know, like, as a young kid, that got to me because I thought of the Carlton history and the culture and how they used to win games in finals when they weren't supposed to. So I'm not sure if it just affected me, but he did something for me like he always did, Big Jack. Absolutely loved him as a president. But I started in defence, and you're right, Jared, I waited years to get in that midfield. I mean, we had Williams and Bradley and Brown and Ratton, all these sort of guys. And they refused to play on the wing, like I just accepted play anywhere, and they wouldn't play in defence or forward, where I would always just, wherever they needed me, I would play. So I sacrificed a lot of my game many times for the sake of the team, but I always believed deep down inside that I could play my best footy in the midfield, and I just unfortunately had to wait. And throughout that season in 99, people probably don't remember, I played centre-half back for majority of the year, well, really all of the year, but sometimes through either the second quarter or the third quarter, they'd throw me into midfield and I'd finish off the game really well. So I had a great 99 season until the last 5 weeks when I got injured. But I had that opportunity that day. I was playing in either back pocket or half back, I can't remember, but I could feel the game, I could read the ball, I was marking well. And at three-quarter time, when Essendon played the way they should have played all day in that third quarter, they kicked 7-7. They got in front of us. That I was just at three-quarter time when the huddle was there thinking, please, just put me in the midfield. And the call didn't come until probably 2 or 3 minutes or 4 minutes in the last quarter. And I dare say it was that time when Murph had the ball at half forward and I was running like a little kid on that wing and sprinting down there hoping that he would see me. And I'm assuming that he did. And he kicked that ball in and I took the mark. And that's where it started. And the boys all lifted. And I know, like, the supporters would tell you that apart from all the premierships that Carlton played in that game, they will probably go down as one of the favourites of all time. Yep.
I've spoken to Styx Kernahan and Diesel and Barry Mitchell and David Parkin about that time between 99 and, what was it, late in 2000 where you did your knee, Cooter. I don't want to embarrass you, but that's as good as football as has ever been played. I mean, people have been close and have equaled it. But Cooter elevated himself in that period to a performance that was 20 to 25 weeks of unbelievable gold.
And you're talking about it, Cooter, almost childlike. I mean, you're taking me back there. It's giving me goosebumps. Tell me, I've had the privilege of sitting in the ABC commentary box with David Parkin for the last 10 years, and I see a lovely, warm, intelligent, smart, beautiful man. I hear about this famous jugular, and I cannot believe it. Can you tell me what he was like at three-quarter time in the huddle of that game and then in the rooms afterwards?
I thought you were talking about me then, Kelly. Right? And then I realised it was Parker. I can't remember what he said, you know, like at three-quarter time. I really don't. Someone said that Soss took us aside and spoke to us at three-quarter time. I really don't remember. All I remember was standing there thinking, you know, just please play me in the midfield. But Parko, although I didn't see eye to eye to him early on, I absolutely adore the guy now. He was just a great motivator, great speaker. That jugular vein. And one time he probably doesn't want anyone to know this, he actually collapsed after screaming that heavily. And I didn't see eye to eye to him then, so I was hoping that he probably wouldn't recover that quickly. But he did, thankfully, because that's not the right attitude to have, is it? But he was a great man, and the death of my father was when probably he and I really connected well, because I needed people, and he was always, you know, he was there for me that time when I needed him. And I always say Barry Mitchell and Wayne Britton, my two greatest mentors, but Parko, I'll never forget as a father figure. And he was just a great man, and I miss him. And every time I see him, I have a smile on my face thinking that he's my premiership coach.
Can I just take you back to that last highlight, though, when Dean Wallace grabbed the ball and it looked like it was going to be all over for the Blues and John Elliott was going to have to eat his words for the next decade. And that tackle, what were you thinking when that all transpired?
I was scared. I mean, that last minute, you know, Mark McCurry had that ball. I love Merckx, not only as a friend but as a player. I thought he was always a threat and he would have kicked that goal 9 times out of 10. I do not know to this day how he missed it. I'm sure he's feeling the same way. But, when the ball was kicked and Dean Wallace, I mean, I was there. I almost hit my foot, and luckily it didn't because it just landed in Justin Murphy's hands. But Fraser Brown, who's a terrific guy and one of the greatest teammates you could have, he was so hard at it. He laid the biggest tackle that we'll always remember, and I can always thank him for that. And then Justin Murphy had the ball. So we were scared. I mean, it wasn't long to go, Jared, but the pressure was obviously on Essendon and not us. But obviously we wanted to win that game to make it to the grand final. So it was just remarkable. And I remember saying in the commentary to Richard Osborn afterwards, it's a dream, it's a dream. Like, I never thought after Essendon had beaten us by 40-odd points the first time we played them, and I think 70-odd points, and Jared, you would know, the second time that we played them. So we should not have even gotten close to them, and we were lucky to get over the line.
Yeah, in round 16 that year, you were beaten by 76 points, and for memory, Poco came out and described his own team as just a B-grade operation. So you certainly elevated yourself. Would it go down in one of your greatest ever games that you've witnessed or you've played in? Because here at Fox Footy, we're actually celebrating the greatest 50 games over the last 50 years. And without doubt, that's got to be in. It's in my top five. Is it in yours?
Oh, definitely. I mean, me, if I'm going to be selfish, you know, for a player to have beaten Essendon, one of our arch rivals who we should not have beaten, they were pretty much unbeatable by one point, 100%. My favourite game, I'll always say it's a 95 premiership, but this is close, in particular for the occasion, being a preliminary final, and the last time really Carlton got to a grand final as well. So there's been some absolute ripping games, and not just Carlton games, obviously in the decades that I watched as well, Jared, but obviously I'm going to be biased and say this was the greatest.
Yep.
You've seen thousands of games in a commentary box as a player. Yep. Have you got your top five for us? Can you share it?
Well, these are my top five as a spectator, and I reckon the very best one I saw was probably the time that the Anzac Day game just elevated itself. There's been a couple along the way, but that draw, round 4, 95, Sav Rocca kicked a bag of goals. I think he kicked 8 or 9, but it was unbelievable. The 96 prelim final, I was commentating that game, and I was commentating it with a Sydney guy whose name escapes me at the present time, but he had a Swans scarf on, and I'll be blown if he wasn't barracking for Essendon. But nevertheless, I don't think he was an AFL man at that particular time. But he was a pretty good caller. And when Plugger kicked that ball across the line, the Swans into the grand final. I mean, a lot of players had gone before us that were trying to get to a grand final for Sydney, and finally that was about to happen. So that was just an amazingly emotional game for me. The 99 prelim final that we've just talked about with Kuta was unbelievable. And then this is one from my childhood. I was 14 years of age, round 20 at Moorabbin. And there was this bloke who forevermore after that game was known as Fabulous Phil Carney.
Yes.
He strutted out in white boots.
Yep.
And no one wore white boots.
That would have been
quite
a risk.
It was huge to wear white boots. And this bloke kicked 11 goals at Moorabbin and just totally dominated. The other end of the ground, Georgie Young, who was a fantastic player as well for the Saints, he kicked about 8. So at one end you had an unbelievable star who turned into one of the game's great names and personalities in Fabulous Phil. And my mob went down again, unfortunately. And the final one was the prelim final in 2016. I think the Giants and the Bulldogs was just an amazing story. I mean, the Giants had that game won. How the Bulldogs got across the line, I guess, gave us an insight into how they got across the line.
And we're going to see it tonight. Yeah. We're going to relive it. I know what you're doing tonight. Well, you're heading home to sit on 100%. The couch. We're going to relive it with that live commentary.
That's the emotion you're talking about earlier with the Swannies. Was exactly like that with myself in 2016 when the Dogs finally made it past the prelim.
Hey, Kuta, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to leave it there. Before we sign off, maybe do you just want to promote the business? If anyone's looking forward to getting in shape during this time or after we get through this period, fire away.
Thanks. They can follow me on social media. You know, Anthony Kuta Fit is really, and, you know, with Kuta Fit, with health, nutrition, mindset, we cover all of it. So feel free, they can join if they want some of the online trainings as well, and they can watch and I get a good workout while stuck at home.
Thanks. I know your walnut business is going well. Why don't you expand into cashews as well, Kuta?
Cashews. Good on you, Kuta.
Kuta's cashews. It's got a bit of a ring to it.
Great stuff. Thanks for taking us back through mid-90s it was into the 2000s.
How good.
It was just so good. And the way he still spoke about it.
The stories from the inner sanctum
at
the Blues and being involved in those, Kuta, that was awesome.
Every injury is a saddening moment for AFL football. Yeah. But when one of the greats has risen to this level, and all of a sudden the Greek god has gone down. I mean, it was just
cut down in his prime.
It was just a tragic blow for us all.
Yeah, it was. Okay, we're watching Fox Footy Live. We'll be back with plenty more to talk about. What's happening in the world of the AFL.